Okay, thank you. As we mentioned, given that this week concludes with Yom Yerushalayim, we're going to devote today to songs that are about Yerushalayim or celebrate Yerushalayim. The first question that might occur to you is, how many such songs are there? So it actually didn't occur to me until after I had actually compiled the source sheet. So the screen that I'm going to show you now is not on the source sheet, but it's easy to get to. The site that we've been using throughout this class has been the Zemer Reshet site. It's the one that all of the links on today's class and other classes are all linked to. And if you go into the Zemer Reshet site, you can see it on the screen in front of you now. And there on the line on top, you type in the word Yerushalayim, assuming that you can type it in Hebrew. Then what you'll get is this list of all of the songs that this organization called Zemer Reshet has collected that they feel are somehow related to Yerushalayim. And it's all listed in alphabetical order. Some actually have the word Yerushalayim in the title, others don't. I did not check all of them because, as you can see, it's a rather long list. It goes on and on and on and on until there are, as you can see, no fewer than 75 separate entries here. So I imagine that if you went through the 75 entries with a good attitude, you could probably justify each and every one of them as being a song that is either directly about Yerushalayim or something that has some connection to Yerushalayim. I didn't use this, as I said, I only came across it after I compiled the source sheet for today's class, but I thought I would share this with you nonetheless. Okay, so going back now to our source sheet, okay, so you can see that this week, which is the 11th week of the class, is devoted to songs about Yerushalayim, Shirei Yerushalayim. And of all of the songs that have anything to do with Yerushalayim, directly or indirectly, this arguably is the oldest one that I could find. As you can see, its title is Kshe'omar Lecha Dodi. Now, of course, you ask yourself, what does Lecha Dodi have to do with Yerushalayim? Now, the answer to that is actually a very obvious one, and that is that with the exception of the first two and the last stanza of Lecha Dodi, which are about Shabbat, right? Shamor v'zachor and Likrat Shabbat and the final stanza about Bo'i v'shalom, okay? The remaining stanzas, all of the middle stanzas of Lecha Dodi are not about Shabbat at all. They're actually all about Yerushalayim. Starting with Mikdash Melech, Ir Melucha, Kumi Tzei Mitoch HaHafecha, right? Every subsequent stanza, Hit Orori, Hit Orori, Ki Vaorech, Kumi Ori, Hit Na'ari Me'afar, Kumi Livshi Bigdei Tifratech, Yerushalayim. Okay? Lo Tevoshi Velo Tikalmi, Matish Tochachi U'matehemi. Okay? Vayulim Shisa Shosayef Rachaku Kom Yevala'ayich. Yaminu smol tifrotzi v'tashem ta'aritzi. As I say again, with the exception of the opening two and closing stanza, the balance of Lecha Dodi is actually a hymn, an ode to Yerushalayim. Not surprising, therefore, that the oldest modern song about Yerushalayim that I could find preserves this connection between Yerushalayim and Lecha Dodi. Lecha Dodi. As you can see again at the top line, under the title Milim, who wrote it, it says Ama Mi Yiddi. It's a Yiddish folk song. And indeed, on the left-hand side of the page, in the left-hand column, you can see what are essentially the original Yiddish words to the song.
Excuse me, we're still looking at Zemereshet.
Pardon me. Thank you for the... Is better? Okay. So, if you look at the left-hand column, you can see the Yiddish words, the original Yiddish words to the song. We don't know who translated it into Hebrew. Nobody really knows who put the tune to it, but it did appear in print as early as the 1890s, and therefore it is reasonable to assume that it was written, or at least it was translated, prior to that. The Yiddish song is probably well known to some of you. It goes as ich vel zogin, if I say the words l'cha dodi, actually l'cha dodi, right? Zot ir zogin, then you, the audience, are supposed to respond, chiri biri bum. I don't have to translate chiri biri bum, it speaks for itself, okay? As ich vel zogin, if I recite the words likras kalo, then again the audience, zot ir zogin, chiri biri bum.
And then Rabbi, sorry to interrupt. Isn't this Lecha Dodi goes back to the Mekubalim in Tzfat in the 13th century?
I'm not sure at all what your point is.
They are the people who composed Lecha Dodi.
Okay, that's nothing. Okay, Lecha Dodi was written in the 16th century in Tzfat. Yes, but this song is 200 years, 300 years later.
Okay.
And they didn't speak Yiddish. Okay. So again, the tune is one that you'll recognize. It's a Yiddish folk tune, but somebody adapted it to Hebrew. And in addition to the stanzas that speak about Lecha Dodi, as you can see, the last two stanzas in Hebrew address Yerushalayim. Okay, so with that, I'll just simply again play the tune for you. And here we go. Make sure that I have the... Okay. The next song is also an adaptation of a Yiddish tune. The words, as you can see on the top of the page, are Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, right? Yerushalayim, the holy city. In this case, the words are original to a poet who lived in Israel and who worked in Yerushalayim in the 1920s. It was published in 1928, and it was put to a Hasidic tune. let me first go over the words, and then I will hum the tune for you so that you will be able to put it together for yourselves before we hear the performance. The words reflect the difficult circumstances of people living in Yerushalayim during the 1920s, where work was hard to find. In fact, the refrain here, if you look at the second stanza, right, that's the one that repeats itself several times. Yerushalayim Ira Kodesh, the author as it was, turns to the city of Yerushalayim, and he asks the city, Lama umadua, why, oh, why? Right? What is he asking the city? Why lo natat li bezeh hachodesh? Why have you not provided me this month yomayim bashavua? Meaning, here is somebody who is looking to work, who's looking to make a living, and he finds with great difficulty only 2 days work every week. Okay. So it's not so much a song celebrating Yerushalayim as a great city, as the city that was once the capital of the Davidic Empire, as a city that once housed the Beit HaMikdash, as the city that Jews turned to in prayer 3 times a day. This is more of a mournful song, bemoaning the tribulations of many of the people who were living in Yerushalayim at this time and were finding it very difficult to maintain themselves. The words are as follows. He says, Tishrei Saba, right, the month of Tishrei, right, the month that actually ushers in the fall season, Pana Oref, right, it's gone already, meaning we're already well into the fall. El Harei Ha'elef, Mishta'el Po Kvar HaChoref. And the winter, as it was, is already sneezing, right? Meaning it's getting cold in the city. Uveino hadelef, and people's eyes are running with tears from the cold. The refrain, Yerushalayim Ira Kodesh, as I said, he's asking Jerusalem rhetorically, why can't you provide me with more than 2 days a week of work? Uvatzrif, in the hut that he lives in, not a house, but a hut, a tzrif. Bocheh hayeled, there's a child crying. Somchot lo shinayim, because he's teething. Gamudhu b'chol hacheled, he is, all the entire child is somewhat shaking or trembling. Why? Ki horim lo ayin, because he's an orphan. That was literally an orphan, or it means that he has parents, but the parents, like this father, is unable to provide for him adequately. And again, the refrain, Yerushalayim Ira Kodesh. So he says to the child, Al tivke b'ni b'li heref, don't cry continuously. Al tivke la'ad, right? Don't cry forever. Rather, he says, da, be aware. Imcha koveset, your mother is out working, meaning you're not a genuine orphan, right? Just that your parents aren't home because they're working. Your mother is a laundress, uva erev, and at night when she returns from work, tavilacha shokolada, she'll bring you a sweet. Then again, the refrain, Yerushalayim. Bamachtsava nafal avicha, your father fell at work in a quarry, right? Carving stones, perhaps the famous white stones that are used for at least the facing of all buildings that are built in Jerusalem. V'nishmato batohu, and his soul is all in turmoil. Ein davar, says to the child, no matter what, sgoret picha, right? Don't cry. Tihi chotsev kamohu. Worst that'll happen is that you will follow him in his profession in the quarry. And the final stanza, tihi chotsev, again, you'll be a miner, so to speak. Tachsov basela, you'll quarry stones from the hill. Tivne Yerushalayim, and at least that way you will participate in the building of the city. Im habechi hu basela, hashtika bishnaim. And here's a play on words, because the word sela is also ancient Hebrew for a coin. So he's saying, im habechi hu basela, if crying is worth one coin, hashtika, then silence is worth, shnayim is worth two coins. So as I said again, it basically depicts the trials and tribulations of a working man in Jerusalem in the 1920s. The tune that it's put to is a reasonably well-known Hasidic tune, to which one usually hears the words, Yamim al Yemei Melech Tosif Shnotav Kimo Dor Vador. It's a pasuk in Tehillim, calling upon God to lengthen the reign of a king and to enable the kings of Israel to reign from one generation to the next. It goes as follows, at least when it's used for the words in Tehillim, Yamim al Yemei Melech Tosif Shnosav B'chol Dor Vador. Yamim al Yemei Melech Tosif Shnosav Kimo Dor Vador. So you'll hear that tune applied to these words. Moving along, this is a very curious one. It's curious because it's listed on the site as a song, but it doesn't list even a single performance of it. You see again on the top, the title of the poem is Eitzel Kotel Ma'aravi, right near the Kotel. It's dated somewheres before the turn of the 20th century, 1895. But the words, it says, Lo Yadua. We don't know who wrote the Hebrew. And it says, Tirgum Nosach Ivri. It was translated from the Yiddish. So what we have here once again is a song that made its way into Hebrew from Yiddish, with really, in this case, no idea when it really took place. The Yiddish song, or the Yiddish poem, of which this is an adaptation, is called In Der Stadt Yerushalayim, in the city of Yerushalayim. I wasn't able to retrieve the Yiddish original either. If you feed the words Stadt in Yerushalayim into Google, you get Kanayin Hara, quite a few entries, but none of them seem to match this Hebrew. So the best that I can do in this case, since I don't even know what tune it was put to, okay, is to simply go over the words and to simply enjoy it for what it is. And that is to say, a poem at least celebrating somebody who, before even the turn of the 20th century, was able not only to live in Yerushalayim, but to approach the Kotel HaMaravi. I should add parenthetically that, of course, the Kotel HaMaravi has, at least since 1967, if not previously, but certainly more since 1967 than even before 1948, has become somewhat synonymous with the old city of Jerusalem. It's a very interesting history to the Kotel HaMaravi. If I can take just a moment to hit some of the highlights of it. There's a Talmudic Midrashic idiom, I guess, or aphorism that says, Shechina b'ma'arav, that somehow God's presence is more profound in the West than in any other of the cardinal directions. Therefore, it's reasonable to assume that anything that's associated with the West will have greater significance than something that is associated with either the North, the East, or the South. Therefore, not surprisingly, we find that Jewish folklore attributes greater significance, and arguably, if there is such a thing, greater kedusha, greater sanctity, to the Western Wall than it does to any of its other three major complements. Now, first of all, let's all remember, because it is something that we know, that the Kotel HaMaaravi is not a remaining wall of the temple. Okay? If you've seen even a map of Jerusalem, let alone having visited the old city, you know that the temple was situated on a hill, and the hill is visible behind the Kotel HaMaaravi. Okay? So the Kotel HaMaaravi was not a wall of the temple building itself. What it was, indeed, was one of the retaining walls of the courtyard in which the temple stood. So that, arguably, roughly, where the Dome of the Rock stands today, okay, somewhere on that plateau that is occupied today partially by the Dome of the Rock, partially by the Al-Aqsa Mosque, right? On that plateau stood the temple, the second temple, right? One that was rebuilt and was elaborated by King Herod in the first century, okay? And it, when it was built by Ezra and Nehemiah in the 6th and 5th centuries before the Common Era, was built on the site on which the original temple built by King Solomon had stood. Okay? By the end of the Second Temple period, in addition to the temple itself and its own immediate courtyard, there was basically an area surrounding the temple that also was considered to be part of the temple complex. And this temple complex had its own outer retaining walls, and there were actually walls on all four sides. Of those original walls, the one that remains today is the Western Wall, and that's the one that attracts pilgrims, it attracts people in prayer, and of course, it attracts tourists. An interesting historical note is that we have a Midrash. The Midrash of all things to the book of Eicha, which is the book of Lamentations, written, if you recall, by the prophet Yirmiyahu to mourn the destruction of the first temple. Therefore, not surprisingly, a lot of legends that are associated with the temple and with the destruction of the temple, not just the first temple of Solomon, but including the second temple, okay, made their way into this midrash on the book of Lamentations. And in one of these midrashim, it says as follows. It says that when the emperor Titus Vespasian conquered Jerusalem, he divided the walls of the city of Jerusalem, or the walls of the temple area, amongst his four generals. And he assigned each of his four generals to destroy one of the walls. Three of the generals obeyed their orders. The fourth one disobeyed and left his assigned wall the Western Wall, standing. Whereupon, of course, he was brought before the Caesar and was charged with disobedience, with a mutiny. He had been given a direct order to destroy the Western Wall, and yet he had left it intact. And according to the Midrash, he had the following explanation that he gave successfully to the king. And his explanation was that if all of the four walls had been leveled, no one would know how great the conquest was, because people wouldn't see just how formidable the defenses and the fortifications of Jerusalem were. Therefore, he said that the reason he didn't destroy the wall was not to disobey his king, but it was, on the contrary, it actually was in order to honor him. Because by leaving the Western Wall standing, people then could look and marvel at just how great the fortifications were. And they could say, wow, if this is just one of the walls of Jerusalem, just imagine what the rest of it looked like and how great a conqueror the king was if he was able to subdue the city and to conquer it. The interesting thing is that according to this Midrash, the general or the duke who had been assigned the Western Wall is called Duchas Arav, the Duke of Arabia. Now, that's a curious thing. Is this an historical fact? If it's an historical fact, then it's just simply a coincidence that the one of the four dukes or generals to whom the walls of Jerusalem were assigned for destruction happened to be from the southern part of the Roman Empire, the portion that today is called Arabia. But as I said, when I introduced this source, the Midrash on Echa, I said that this Midrash, because it talks about the destruction of Jerusalem, seems to have attracted a lot of folklore about the city of Jerusalem. And it may very well be that the identification of this Roman general with Arabia was not an historical fact or a coincidence, but rather it's a testimony to a later episode in Jewish history. And that is as follows. After the failure of the Bar Kokhba rebellion in the second century of the Common Era, under the persecutions that the Jews suffered under the Emperor Hadrian, Jews were forbidden to live in Jerusalem. Residence in Jerusalem was forbidden to Jews. In fact, we know that there was a custom that arose, and we have evidence for it in the fourth century of the Common Era, that because Jews were prohibited from living in Jerusalem, they were able to enter the city only once a year. They entered the city once a year on Tisha B'Av, the anniversary of its destruction, because first the Romans and subsequently the Christians. You remember in the fourth century, the Roman Empire converted to Christianity. So the sight of these Jews visiting the ruins of Jerusalem and the ruins of the temple on the anniversary of its destruction. Remember that Tisha B'Av recalls not only the destruction of the first temple, but the destruction of the second temple as well. Somehow that gave pleasure first to the Romans and then to the Christians. This prohibition against Jews living in Jerusalem ended in the middle of the 7th century, shortly after the year 638, which is the year in which the city of Jerusalem was conquered from the Byzantine Christians by the Muslim Arabs. When the Muslims conquered Jerusalem in the 7th century, one of the first things they did was allow Jews to return and to live in the city. So it could very well be that the fact that this Midrash celebrates the remaining wall of the city of Jerusalem, that it celebrates the Kotel HaMa'aravi as having been left intact by the Duke of Arabia, was engendered by the historical recognition on the part of Jewish folklore that it was an Arab king, a later Arab king in the 7th century, who allowed the Jews to return and to resume their residence in Jerusalem. In any event, the poem goes as follows. Eitzel Kotel Ma'aravi Shama Bir HaKodesh Yerushalayim, there at the Western Wall in the city of Jerusalem, the Holy City, B'chi Yisrael Nishma Barama. One can hear the cries of the Jewish people. Tzaakatam Bo Ka'at Shamayim, their cries pierce the heavens. Sion T'maher Hofi'a Me'et Adonai Yevakeshu Shlach Lanu HaMoshi'a Oto Yom Yom Yidroshu. And what are they crying out to heaven for? They're crying out to God to hasten the arrival of their Savior, of their Moshiach, for whom they pray daily. And the refrain goes, Ana Eloheinu Kravna Yeshuatenu, please, O Lord, bring our salvation near. L'chava l'adcha kivinu, you alone do we anticipate. Havienu la'artzenu, return us to our land. Ana Eloheinu, please, O God. Nehederet ba'adei adayim tzion nefanim hayetat, the city of Zion, in the past, was considered a beautiful, glorious city. Okay, the Talmud itself, which was no great fan of King Herod, right, nevertheless says that anyone who did not see the temple as it was renovated by Herod, lo ra'a binyan yafeh miyamav, didn't see something really architecturally truly beautiful. So Jerusalem lefanim in the past was nehederet. It was a beautiful, glorious city. Mikom mamlachot afsayim, greater than anything found in any other kingdom. The osher v'chavod alatak, both in its wealth and in its honor, it was greater than them. Kikochavim misaviv yareach, as though those they were only stars surrounding the moon. Hofanu birushalayim ata teshev koder, and now the city of Jerusalem is dark. Vanachnu ki tomim chayim, and the Jewish residents of Jerusalem are like orphans. Habayit, the temple, hukal irsisim, was smashed into little pieces. Meruchushenu asu tel, and the Romans, when they destroyed it, took the property of the temple and the property of the Jewish people, and they made a big pile of it. Keleha baku lechfisim, and they took the instruments of the temple and the pertinences of the temple, and again they smashed them into pieces. Shudad mimenu hakol, they stole everything. They either took it to Rome or they took it elsewhere. Kamar ra'inu machalava nega, and in the interim, how much illness and how much worry and sorrow have we suffered and seen? Me'az galinu, from the time that we were then exiled from the land, stavalnu ason vafega, and we've suffered all manner of catastrophe, mison enu velo chatzim, from our enemies and from those who are oppress us. And again, the refrain, Ana Eloheinu Kravna Yeshuatenu, please, O God, hasten our salvation. And since I wasn't able to put a tune to the previous song, I decided to follow up with one whose tune is certainly very well known. This is perhaps the most famous of all of the songs about Yerushalayim. Me'al Pisgat Harat Sofrim, from the peak of Mount Scopus, which is slightly to the east and north of the old city of Jerusalem. Eshtechavelach Hapayim, I will bow deeply to the city of Jerusalem. Me'al Pisgat Harat Sofrim, from the peak of Mount Scopus. Shalom lach Yerushalayim, I greet the city of Jerusalem. Now, of course, that isn't certain in the modern period. That is not the place from which one gets one's first glimpse of Jerusalem. Nowadays, one of the first things that one sees when approaching Jerusalem, at least from the main approach on Route 1, is what's called David's Harp. Right, that little trestle on which the monorail travels, but even in previous centuries, let's say even in the 19th century or the 18th century, the port of entry to Palestine, into the land of Israel, generally was the city of Jaffa, Yafo. And therefore, people coming to Jerusalem for the first time, pilgrims or Jews who were coming on Aliyah, or tourists like Mark Twain in the late 19th century, right, arrived in the Holy Land in Yafo, and therefore they made their way to Jerusalem from the west to the east. Okay, but people who are coming not by boat, people who are coming, let's say, from Babylonia to Jerusalem, as many Jews did during the Second Temple for the three pilgrimage festivals, and as they continued to do even in later generations, if they were coming from Syria, if they were coming from Iraq, if they were coming from Iran, then their approach to Jerusalem was not from the west to the east, but their approach to Jerusalem was from the northeast going southwest. And if you approach Jerusalem from the northeast, then it's quite likely that your first view of Jerusalem would be, in fact, from the peak of Har HaTzofim, from Mount Scopus. And therefore, the author, Avigdor HaMe'iri, whose name before he changed it was Feuerstein, okay, who was again a Hungarian Jew, actually served honorably in the Austro-Hungarian army during World War I, okay, was even taken captive, was a prisoner of war in Russia for a while before the 1917 revolution freed him. And shortly thereafter, in the early 1920s, he made his way to Israel. If I'm not mistaken, there is even evidence that he came to Israel in the company of Chaim Nachman Bialik. So he writes that he greets Jerusalem from the top of Mount Scopus. Me'adorot chalamti alayich. He says that I've dreamt of Jerusalem for 100 generations. Obviously, he's not talking about himself. He's talking about all of the Jews who have dreamt of Jerusalem throughout all the generations of exile. Lizkot, that we may have the virtue or the merit, lirot ba'or panayich, to be able to see Jerusalem with our own eyes. Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim, he calls upon it, ha'iri panayich livneich, shine your countenance, right? Light up your countenance for your children who are looking towards you. Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim, he says, mechorvotayich evneich, that I'm willing to contribute my own labor to rebuild you from your prior destruction. And there are several other stanzas to it. I'm not going to go through the translation of all of them. This is readily available. It's a very well-known song. But I found a rather significant recording of it that I think you'll particularly appreciate. This recording has none other than the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra playing the music, while the words are going to be sung by none other than the famous cantor, the Chazan, Yitzchak Meir Helfgott.
Yeah.
that's the link on the page, on the source page, the one that says the YouTube link, that's the one to HealthGap that I just played. Okay. I'm going to skip this on account of the constraints of time, and go to a relatively new song about Yerushalayim. But it happens to be, of all of the songs of Yerushalayim, it happens to be my favorite. So you'll just have to indulge me in this opportunity to play one of my favorite songs. As you can see on the screen, it's called Shemot Harbei Yerushalayim, that the city of Jerusalem has been known by many names. Okay, the words in this case are written by Dan Almagor. Dan Almagor was only born in 1935, so clearly this is not one of those songs from the turn of the 20th century. It isn't one of those songs of people looking at Jerusalem in the 1920s, or even for that matter, struggling to liberate Jerusalem in 1948, or even for that matter, in 1967. This is, however, a song celebrating Yerushalayim. And the words go as follows. Shemot harbei Yerushalayim, the city of Jerusalem has been known over time by a variety of different names. V'chol shem na'em echaveiro. And every subsequent name of Jerusalem is even more beautiful than its predecessor. And here he enumerates some of the names. Kiryat Melech Rav. Okay. That's a biblical name for Jerusalem. The city of the great kings. Kiryat Ne'emana, the faithful city. Misos Kol Ha'aretz, the city in which the entire land takes delight. Ir Ba David Chana, the city in which David encamped. Then again the refrain, Shemot HaBeil Yerushalayim, Jerusalem has many names, V'chol Shem Yafeh Mechaveiro, and each is more beautiful than the next. Yafeh Nof, one spectacular view. Keter Baharim, the crown on the top of the mountains. Ariel, which either means the lion of God, or some say it's like Ur, a light, a reference to the altar, to the Mizbeach in the Beit HaMikdash. Ir Shel Zahav. Of course, that's, as we already mentioned last week, both a modern name for Yerushalayim born of the famous song written by Naomi Shemer, or, as I pointed out last week, it's the name of a particular item of jewelry that was already used by women in the second century of the Common Era, because that's something that Rabbi Akiva promised to his wife. Then he comes and he says, V'im navo navo limnot hayom, if we try today to count, to enumerate, et shmotea shel Yerushalayim, of all of the names by which Jerusalem has been known throughout history, yichle haniyar will run out of paper, tivash hadyo will run out of ink, V'tiga kol yad, our hand will become tired of writing, and yet v'hem lo yichlu, and we still will not have run out of names to Jerusalem. And then it ends and says as follows, Na'em mikol mikol ha'shemot, the most beautiful of all of the names by which the city has been known throughout history, Na'em mikol ha'shem Yerushalayim. The name Yerushalayim is the most beautiful of all. And here we have the song for us.
Shemot Harbei Yerushalayim, V'chol Shem Na'em Echaveiro. Shemot Harbei Yerushalayim, V'chol Shem Na'em Echaveiro. Kiryat Melech Rav, Kiryat Ne'emana. Esos kol haaretz irba David Chana, Kiryat Melech Rav, Kiryat Ne'emana, Esos kol haaretz irba David Chana. Shemot harbe Yerushalayim, V'chol shem yafe mechaveiro, Shemot harbe Yerushalayim, V'chol shem yafe mechaveiro. Yafe henof keter beharim, Ariel ir shel zahav. Yafe henof keter beharim, Ariel ir shel zahav. Ve'im נבוא למנות היום את כל שמותיה של ירושלים. ואם נבוא למנות היום את כל שמותיה של ירושלים, יכלה הנייר ותיבש הדיו ותיגע כל יד והם לא יכלו. יכלה הנייר ותיבש הדיו ותיגע כל יד והם לא יכלו. נאה מכל השמות, נאה מכל השם ירושלים. נאה מכל השמות, נאה מכל השם ירושלים.
Two appendices, so to speak.
Here in Manhattan, on how long you live depends.
Two appendices, so to speak, to Songs of Jerusalem. One was actually requested last week. Somebody asked if I could find a song that she heard from her parents, a song that celebrated the building of the port in Tel Aviv. And it's called Shir HaNamal, or some say it's Namel, the Song of the Port. And as you can see, it says, L'merchakim, from the great distance, Mafligot HaSfinot, ships set sail, Elef Yadayim Porkot Uvonot, thousands of hands load and unload the ships, Anu Kovshim Et Achof VaHagal, and the builders of the port are conquering, as it were, the coastline and the waves, Anu Bonim Po Namal, Po Namal, and there they're building the port, Mutzak HaBaton, they're pouring the concrete, Muram Hamanof, they're lifting things by crane. Sirot Hamit'an, today they would be container ships. In those days, they were simply just freighters. Magiyot El Hachof, arrive at the coast. Techelet Milmata, and the sky, the water below them is blue. Techelet Me'al, and the sky above them is blue. Kacha Nivne Hanamal Hanamal, and that is they go about building the port. And I do believe that I found a recording of it, and it goes as follows. I'm glad I was able to accede to the request and to find the song. And I just want to end with one song that has nothing to do with Jerusalem, but it has to do at least with the fact that this week the Torah reading is from the beginning of the book of Bimidbar, and I thought that at the very least we should say something about the Midbar. So here we have again the words to a well-known song. The words were composed by Chaim Sefer, who at the time that he wrote them was still Chaim Feiner. We'll have a good deal more to say about him when we conclude next week. But he wrote many songs based partially on his own experiences during the war, the War of Independence in 1948. And this one is called Lech Lech La Midbar, go out into the desert. Hadrachim Yovilu, that's where the roads will lead. Layel Terem Ba, it's still not too dark to travel. Lech Achiel HaMidbar, there's still time to travel into the Midbar. Midbar, remember, is not so much a desert or a wilderness as it was at least when this was written in 1948 or 1949, just about anything that was south of Be'er Sheva. Shuv shuv nachazor hatzukim yariyu. We'll come back again, we'll come back again and again. The mountains, the cliffs, as it were, will call out or will celebrate. Shemesh gdola shel oro tizrach aleinu. And again, when you go out into this part of the country, certainly into the desert part of it, you're subject to the very bright sunshine. Lamidbar, again, the wilderness, the desert, Eretz Lomayim, a place in which it is difficult to find water. Ho'at admati, and yet, nevertheless, this is part of our land. Shavnu elayach, and we return to it. Eretz Milucha, there may be salt lands, as there are in the vicinity of the Dead Sea. Ruach, winds blow, vaza'am, they blow, the chamsin winds that blow strongly. Halochamim chazruho kasar, and again, he's talking about his experience as a soldier in 1948 as they conquered the Negev. Lamidbar again, Eretz Lomayim, a land without abundant water. Ho admati shavnu elayach. And again, we have it here, courtesy of the famous Israeli duo, the Parbarim.
Yovilu la'ir derem bar lechachi el hamidbar shuv shuv nachazor hatzukim yarimu shemesh gdola shel or or tizrach aleinu la'u midbar eretz lomayim mo'ad admati shavnu elayim la'u midbar eretz lomayim mo'ad admati shavnu elayim eretz melucha ruach chaza aloch hamim chazru goy kasa
Okay. You've got the links. You can enjoy more of it at your leisure if you wish. Let me take a quick look at the chat and see if there's anything I can respond to. Arav, ma'arav. No, it's not a play on words. It's just the same derivation. Ma'arav, the mem of ma'arav is the mem of location, like the mem of mizrach. Mizrach is the direction from which the sun shines. Ma'arav is the direction in which the sun sets. Okay. No, none of these songs are Zionistic in the modern sense of the word, more messianic. I won't dispute that. They're not necessarily messianic. They're somewhat idyllic, somewhat hopeful, not necessarily messianic. It's not an entirely different tune than the one you're accustomed to from Eyal Pisgat Har HaTzofim. The one that you're accustomed to, and I'm accustomed to it as well, is really just an adaptation of the one that we heard Chazan Helfgott singing. I don't know, Yoram Garon. Yoram Garon is not one of the people we listen to today. Not sure which song you thought was his. Okay, just to remind you all that we're going to have our final session, or at least this time around next week. It's going to take me a little while to see whether I can actually put together a decent enough repertoire for a round two. But next week, we'll conclude with some of the oldies but goodies, and as well as in honor of the fact that the end of next week is Shavuot, I'm going to see how many songs I can find. Remember, we found 75 songs that relate to Yerushalayim. You think I'm going to find 75 songs about Torah? Now, you're skeptical. I am too. But I'll let you know next week how many I find and which they are. So once again, have a good week, and we'll see you all next Tuesday.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very, very much.
Very much.
Thank you. It was excellent.
Lovely.
Looking forward to next week, hoping you find another course to do too.